You're listening to the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast, brought to you by Exmark Manufacturing. 30 years of pioneering spirit and innovation have resulted in legendary durability, all-day comfort, and unmatched cut quality. Go check them out at Exmark.com. And Crest Commercial, introducing the 8-Minute Cyber System, the industry's first truly game-changing innovation in commercial battery-powered OPE. Professional landscapers can now replace their gas powered equipment without sacrificing performance, power, or runtime. For more information or to find a Crest dealer near you, visit Crest.com. You're listening to the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast, the weekly show sharing proven methods and systems in marketing, equipment, and customer service. Educational and motivational to help make your lawn care business an overwhelming success. Now, here's your host, Julio Tomei.
Welcome, Lawn Care Nation, to another episode of the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast. I'm your host, Julio Tomei, and this is episode number 436, entitled Last Mow of the Season. Well, hello, everybody, and thanks again for joining me this week on another episode of the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast. Really appreciate you guys tuning in each and every week, and of course, for the questions, the comments, and the feedback that you guys send through. I really do appreciate all of that. I got a very kind review left on the podcast this past week that I really do appreciate from Chad from Houston, who gave a 5-star review. He says, fantastic podcast with so much value. I'm very thankful that I was able to find this podcast this year, even though Julio has been after it for a while now. This was my first year full-time in my lawn care business. I've gained so much knowledge from just listening to the Lawn Care Business Success this season while at work. Not sure what episode I came in on earlier this year, but I have now started all the way back to the first episode and listening to all episodes. The first episodes date back to 2015 and are packed with great content for anyone in the lawn care business, new and existing. I am beyond excited to continue listening to the last 8 years of episodes, experience, and knowledge. There are too many episodes that I can name right now that have been great. I cannot imagine where I would be today had I come across this podcast in 2020 when I started part-time. Thank you so much, Julio. Your longevity in lawn care and podcasting is very inspiring. Very grateful that you are sharing all your wisdom and experience with the rest of us. Keep going, take care, and stay blessed. With gratitude, Chad. So thank you so much, Chad from Houston, for leaving that very kind review. I really do appreciate it. And I'm so happy that you receive value from these episodes. That is obviously the intent. You know, going in to the podcast and doing the podcast over so many years. Absolutely fantastic. And thank you very much for doing that. For those of you that do listen to the podcast, if you haven't done so yet, I would absolutely appreciate a review on Apple Podcasts specifically, but wherever you listen to your podcasts, a review would be fantastic as well. But like I've explained in past episodes, Apple Podcasts still is kind of that dominant podcast platform. It's where a lot of the smaller podcast players and stuff will draw their feed from. So those recommendations and those reviews all come into play all, you know, across the board in that regard. So thank you so much. If you guys do receive value from these episodes, it's a great way, if you want to sort of show your appreciation, is to leave a review on iTunes. Or Apple Podcasts. I'm still calling it iTunes after so many years of being in the podcast game for so long. I still can't get my head around them calling it Apple Podcasts when it was, called, iTunes for so long. So this past week, as the title infers for this particular episode, I got done my mowing for 2023. So my lawn care part, at least, of my 18th season here in business is now complete, now done. It's in the books. And it was a bit of a struggle getting to that finish line at the end. I should have actually been done last week. At the time of this recording, I'm actually recording this on the Monday evening before this episode goes live on the Tuesday. And I am catching up with the Mohs. Today I finished that last one that I need to, my large commercial property that was supposed to be done on the Thursday previous, but ran into some truck trouble. And so that set me back a bit. I was started out Thursday morning, like, you know, every normal morning, going about my route. When I got to actually the second house, things started to kind of unwind a little bit. The second house wasn't too bad. It was just parking was an issue at the second house. So I ended up skipping the second house and going to the third house. And then figured, you know, I could just double back to the second house. So I went to the third house and then, did that one. Parking was not an issue. Was able to mow that one. There was a little bit of frost, Thursday morning on that particular lawn. So there were some spots, where it was a little bit difficult. Most of the majority of the lawn was fine, but there were some spots where, it wasn't quite, you know, there was a couple leaves and stuff in the ground that, the mowers wouldn't pick up because they were literally frozen to the ground. But after I got done that, I got into the truck and then I started it up and noticed that the battery light wouldn't turn off, and the little sort of message center on the dashboard said battery's not charging. So I was like, okay, that's, you know, that's not good. And then it lasted for a few seconds, then it went away. And I was like, okay, that's odd. I've never in the 13 or 14 years owning that truck ever I even seen that message before. But I immediately started thinking, okay, well, battery's not charging. That must be like alternator and stuff. But at the same time, once we started hitting these sort of frost mornings where, you know, the truck is covered in frost, you got to scrape windows, lawns are completely, you know, crunchy, you know, covered in frost, roofs and stuff are covered in frost. You see your breath, all that sort of stuff. The truck wouldn't start. It would crank just barely, but it would not start. So I had to start plugging in the truck, the block heater in the mornings, which is kind of odd because it's not like crazy cold. Like it's cold, there's frost and all that stuff, but it's not like, you know, extremely into the cold temperatures yet. Where I remember years ago looking in like the manual for my truck about the block heater and stuff, and you're not even supposed to use it till it's like something ridiculous, like minus 20 or something like that is when you like, you go and plug it in. So we're talking about like, you know, it being like, you know, maybe dipping to like minus 2 or something in overnight. And then when I'm up in the morning, it's like, you know, maybe 1 degree or something like that, maybe. And the truck's not starting. So it's like, well, it shouldn't need the block heater and stuff, but I plugged it in just to see. And, overnight, it would start absolutely fine. Anytime I had the block heater in, because obviously it's a lot easier to start. Being a diesel engine, it's getting older as well, and it requires two batteries. It has the two starting batteries and stuff. It just takes a lot of energy to get that engine to turn over. The oil, you know, in a diesel is so, you know, it's a lot heavier weight. It's like molasses on a cold day. And it's why you'll see like semi truck drivers and stuff that drive up north and things like that. They leave their trucks running all night. It's just because it's much easier than trying to get a diesel engine to start in cold weather. So, you know, I was kind of throwing me off because I was like, well, you know, when I got, you know, any time in the past when I've gotten, you know, new batteries and stuff like that, the truck doesn't have a, you know, a hard time starting. I'll still plug in the truck, but only like on those really extreme temperature days, just to keep it in case of an emergency, in case I got to start the truck and go or something like that. Especially, you know, in past years when, before my father passed away, you know, when he was ill and stuff like that, it was like, you know, I'll keep the truck ready, keep it plugged in case there's like snow and stuff and I got to need the four-wheel drive, I got to get there or something happens, and, you know, I'll keep it ready, right? But, you know, when the, you know, if there's time to spare and it's not like an emergency or something, the truck would start fine with the battery, if the batteries were new. So it was kind of odd, that was throwing me off, that it was saying, you know, batteries are not charging. And then, you know, I was having this issue where I had to plug in the truck to keep it warm. And so, you know, I started, I got home and I was looking, grabbed my multimeter and just started checking the voltage, you know, with the truck off. The batteries were both reading about 12 point something, you know, volts. And then, you know, you start the truck, so get the alternator going, and then it should read around 14.7 volts or so. So I was getting that off of one battery, but then the other battery was showing like 12 volts still. So that was kind of throwing me off. So I thought, okay, well, it must be the batteries. You know, that in conjunction with the fact that it wasn't starting in the mornings. And so I said, you know, the batteries, they're only 4 years old though. They're, you know, I replaced them, in January, I think of 2019, is when I replaced them. And so I was like, you know, they're not that old, right? So I was looking up on the battery, the warranty on them and stuff. And I was literally like a month and a half shy of the 4 year free replacement warranty. And I bought the batteries at Costco because their warranties are just fantastic on batteries and stuff. And I'll explain a little bit more about that. So I decided, you know what? It's, you know, Thursday, it's like 12 o'clock in the afternoon. I've had to, you know, kind of figure this out. I don't want to take a chance and go to the next property and go get that mow done and then be stuck because, you know, the truck won't start or something like that, and then have to get it towed, and then the whole issue with the trailer and having, you know, bigger machines on the back, and so it'd just be a huge headache, right? So I quickly grabbed some tools, pulled both of the batteries out of the truck, and then put them in my wife's car, in the spare car that we weren't using. So I put that in there, got in the car, drove to the Costco. And at first I went up to the door and that sort of the exit door, and could see a long line of people waiting for returns and stuff. But I thought, okay, well, I just got to go to the automotive center. So they have a sort of like a greeter at the door. And I said, well, I got, you know, batteries. And they said, oh yeah, just go in, you know, to the battery department there, the automotive department. So I went in and they looked at me and they're like, they saw the batteries and they're like, oh, those are under warranty still. You have to go and return them. And I was like, what? Like, that's kind of weird. Like, I have to actually return. They're like, yeah, you return the batteries and then you just, you know, get the new ones or whatever. And I was like, okay, that's kind of weird. I was thinking in my head, because that's like, I don't know, I just thought it was kind of strange, right? So I went out and I had to go like, okay, now I got to wait in this big line to go for return these batteries. So I waited in line. While I was in the line, I was looking up on the Costco website how much the batteries were, because I was like, man, I bought these in 2019. They were like $119 a piece. And now I'm looking and they're $168. So I'm like, well, how's this work? If I'm returning the batteries and they give me my money back, how's that free replacement if they're $119 a piece and now they're $169 a piece and they're still under warranty for free replacement? So I was kind of confused about that. And then it was finally my turn to get up to checkout. So I kind of asked them about that and they're like, oh yeah, don't worry about it. We, what we do is we return the batteries, but we return it to a store credit, on like a gift card. But it's, you get the actual value of what the new batteries would cost to replace. So if they're $169 now, then you're going to get $169 times two plus the taxes and stuff so that you can, it covers the cost of buying the two new batteries. So I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of a weird way to do it, but whatever, right? So they returned the two other batteries, and with Costco, like I said, their warranty and return policy is fantastic. They don't even, like, I've gone in there before and asked them with other vehicle, you know, if they could check the battery and stuff, because, you know, some automotive places, you go and buy a battery, they'll check, do a test on, they have nothing to test the batteries. They don't check the batteries, they don't test them, you know, anything like that. So, like, you go to return the batteries, they just return them. There's no questions asked. There's no nothing, right? So that's what I mean. Like, their warranty is fantastic. So I return the batteries. I go to the tire / battery department. And they gave me two brand new Group 78 batteries, which is what my truck uses. And they ring them up. And this is the only kind of convoluted or weird kind of part about it, is that then they had to charge me the core charges for the batteries, for the original or for the new batteries. And then you have to go back to the customer service department where the returns were to get your refund on the core charges, because I had already, you know, I was returning the original batteries and stuff. So it's just kind of a weird way that they do it in that way. But in the end, I was, you know, super pleased with it because I got brand new batteries. And not only did I get brand new batteries under warranty, but I got a whole, because of the way they do it, they return the old batteries and they make you buy the new ones again. So you get a whole new receipt with a whole new warranty period. So it starts again, free replacement for 4 more years on these new batteries. So for me, it was like, you know, kind of hit me going, that doesn't make sense. Like, why would you guys do it that way? I'm sure there's like so many people that would take advantage of your policy like that, like just go in every 4 years before the warranty expires and return your batteries and get a new set of batteries. And you could potentially never have to buy batteries again. Like, to me, it doesn't make sense. But somebody else was explaining, like, at Costco, like, they don't care because their whole policy is if a brand or a company wants to sell their products at Costco, part of the deal is they have to accept every warranty that comes back regardless. So for Costco, it's no skin off of them. They don't care because it just goes back to the manufacturer and they get a credit for whatever gets returned. So I was like, okay, that's kind of, you know, still it's kind of a weird policy. I was like, wouldn't it be better if you guys just, you know, gave me the new batteries and I kept the old receipt? And that way, you know, if something goes wrong, you know, now, because I only had a month left on the free replacement, and then it was like 9 years of prorated, and then I would have to come back and buy batteries at a prorated price and stuff like that. But that's not how they do it. So I thought that was kind of weird. So anyways, I get home, throw the batteries in, start up the truck, and there's no message, and the battery light goes out. So I was like, oh, perfect. That must have been it. So I'm like, well, you know, it's like 2 o'clock by this time. I'm like, okay, I got enough time to at least go do one more house before, you know, sunlight disappears early, being the fall here. So I get in the truck, go to do the next house, go get it done, and get back into the truck when I'm done about an hour later or so. Go to start the truck, and the battery light comes on, battery's not charging. So I'm like, so it wasn't the batteries, although I was like, okay, that, you know, that's, you know, an issue, but I'll see tomorrow in the morning. I'll purposely not plug the truck in, the block heater, and see if it starts in the frost, because it was supposed to be really cold that next morning. So I left the truck overnight, and luckily the when I had started the truck, the battery light, you know, was on for about, you know, 20, 30 seconds, and it went out. And you could see the voltage dropping. So I was kind of starting to panic because I was like, hopefully, you know, if it drops too low, the truck's going to stall out and then I won't be able to start it again because the, you know, the voltage will be too low. But luckily the light went out. So I was like, man, that's so weird. So, you know, I got home, unloaded, and, you know, it was getting dark already. So I was like, okay, whatever, I'll deal with it in the morning. Left the truck unplugged. Next morning, I go out there and go to start the truck in the frost, like full on frost and everything. And truck starts like butter. I was like, you know, okay, now I don't feel so bad that I returned the batteries in the first place, because obviously the batteries did have an issue. They were not able to start the truck in these conditions. So obviously they were, even though they were only 4 years old, they were already having some problems. So, you know, that part, I felt, you know, good about, that at least worked, but I still had to figure out, this battery's not charging, issue, 'cause it was still coming on. So I started looking and, you know, doing some research and stuff and, you know, checking all this sort of different connections and stuff. And this is where I love, like, YouTube, being able to search videos and seeing how people are testing all the different, I found a really comprehensive video on testing, not only the batteries to check, the voltage and stuff from the alternator, but, checking sort of the negative side of the system versus the positive side of the system, electrically speaking, and doing tests running. Like, there's one where you're putting the negative prong from your multimeter on the negative post of your battery, and then the positive prong you're actually putting on the alternator case while it's running, and checking the reading there. And then depending on, you know, what the reading is according to the video, then if you get, you know, a good reading, then you can, you know, you can stop there. But if you get a bad reading, then you go to like the actual bracket that's holding the alternator and check there. And then you kind of work your way through all the points of the negative system, going all the way to the ground strap that goes from the engine to the body of the truck. So very comprehensive, got to. And even though I had a good reading right at the alternator case, I did the other test anyways, just to confirm. And was getting, you know, in terms of testing the alternator and stuff, it was fine. Like, check the positive side and all that sort of stuff was all, you know, fine. I was getting 14 volts when the truck was running and all that sort of stuff. So it was really throwing me off. But then I did one more test. I was like turning off the truck, turning on the truck sort of thing. And sometimes it would come on, sometimes it wouldn't come on. And there was one time I caught it where it said battery's not charging, and I quickly went out there and checked. And I, at that time, was only getting 12 volts from the alternator. So I was like, oh, it's not charging. And then I shut off the truck and then went to turn it on again to see, you know, will that wake up the alternator? Maybe it's just an intermittent problem. And so I started it again, and the battery light initially came on, then it shut off. And so then I went to check the voltage, and now it was saying 14 volts. So I was like, oh, it's got to be the alternator. It's, you know, absolutely has to be alternator. I've taken apart all the sort of connections, battery connections and stuff. There's a little junction box because it's two batteries where the connections all kind of meet, where the alternator goes to this junction box, and then that kind of splits to the two batteries. So I had taken that all apart, cleaned all those connections. There was no corrosion or anything, but there was oxidation. So I just, you know, took some steel wool, cleaned all those connections, put it all back together. Was still getting the battery's not charging indicator. So I was like, it's got to be the alternator. So at the end, I ended up just going buying a new alternator, putting that in. And so far, so good. The light hasn't come on. So I'm hoping all day today we use the truck and never had the issue come up again. Hopefully that was it. But in the end, you know, I've got new batteries and new alternator and stuff. So should be good for the, you know, harsh cold winter coming here to be able to start and run the truck when needed. But it's just one of those things where, you know, I was in the home stretch. I literally had, you know, two or three lawns left when, you know, that truck trouble initially started happening. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I had this all planned out. Like, that next morning was supposed to be really frosty, like I said it was. And I was like, had it all planned out that the Thursday I would finish all my mowing. I could get the mowers all put away and stuff. And then on the Friday, with, you know, the frost in the morning, I would be able to back the truck and trailer into sort of the winter storage where I put my trailer in the backyard. And I like to do that when it's frosty because, you know, between summertime and now, you know, we get a lot of heavy, consistent rain. So the lawn is really saturated. It's really wet and soft and stuff. So I don't like driving the truck and stuff over the front lawn because it can potentially rut and stuff like that. You know, and when we first moved in, I remember trying to move the truck, our trailer into the backyard. And, you know, I have to drive over the front lawn to get to the section. And sunk like right in. The truck was like down to the axles in the front lawn. It was so soft. So I had actually trenched out because there's a particular path because there's a tree and the house and the roof eave and all that sort of stuff. There's this exact path that I have to take. I can't deviate from it because if I go from one direction, you know, I could potentially with the ramp of the trailer, how it sticks up, you know, up high, it could hit the roof eave, and I can't go any closer to the other side because there's a tree. So there's always this exact path that I have to take to go get the trailer in the backyard. So after that time years ago, when I went too far in and the ground was soft, I ended up digging out two trenches that go from the driveway all the way to the gate under the front lawn, and dug them down about a foot and a half or so, and filled them in with like limestone and compacted them just to make sort of like a road base type material. And then put soil over top of that and then grew the lawn and stuff. So for most of the year, because we get so much rain, it's not an issue. Even though there's a lot less dirt in that area, it's much shallower. There's probably only 6 inches of soil and stuff between the road base and the top of the lawn there and where those like tracks are. But it makes a huge difference in holding the weight of the truck and stuff without, trenching the lawn or anything like that. But in the summertime is when I have to be careful because, you have to keep it watered and stuff. Otherwise it'll dry out and it dries out those two tracks, right away, right? Because, there's not as much soil there to retain moisture. So, other than that, it has worked out well for that. But in the winter, I just like to just go over the lawn anyways, because it's so saturated and stuff. Even that 6 inches at the top can like divot and stuff. So I like when it's frozen, when it's frosted, because it just adds another, layer of, protection there to drive over without, having it rut and stuff. Supports the weight a lot easier. So I had it all planned out. And then of course, those plans got thrown out with the truck not able to complete the jobs and stuff those days. But hopefully got it all sorted out. The weather was fantastic today. Got out there, finished the last few mows that Friday. I was able to, after having the batteries and stuff like that, I went out and did a couple mows. Wasn't having sort of the battery issue, and again it was like intermittent, so in the morning initially it wasn't showing me the battery's not charging stuff. It was later in the day that it did it again, so I was like, oh, like what a bummer that it's still doing it and stuff. But luckily, like, all my jobs are close to home, so I was like, okay, it's only a 5-minute drive. If that doesn't shut off, I should be able to get home, on the, especially with two brand new batteries, they should have enough voltage in them to be able to get me home. The 5-minute drive, and it's all like, residential side streets and stuff. It's not like busy roads or anything. So when it came to today, Monday, I just had the one property left for my last mow of 2023, last leaf cleanup, basically. And that was my big, commercial property that I use the Navigator on. So I went out there in the morning, and sure enough, because of the storm we had last week, even though, I had done a huge leaf cleanup there the week before. Because the storm rolled in literally like a day or two after I had done that large leaf cleanup, there was plenty of branches on the ground and leaves and all that sort of stuff. So not as much as the initial leaf cleanup I did, and it's been ongoing from basically the end of summer, September, October. It's been on a weekly basis of just, taking low hopper full after hopper full of leaves. And luckily they have a big compost area in the back where I can go dump stuff. But it went there today, and it was, a lot of picking up branches and stuff like that, moving that to side. And then I think I got like two and a half hoppers full with the Navigator of sort of the last bits of leaves and stuff that were there. Surprising how much it was still growing since the last time, but definitely should be done now with the consistent frost and stuff that we have been getting, that dip in temperatures. So I wrapped that one up, was able to get back home unload the Navigator. The other thing I took advantage of was, since that was the last mow with the Navigator at that commercial farm type property, and they had that compost area in the back, after I unloaded the last hopper full of leaves and stuff, I took the opportunity to clean the Navigator right there. In terms of, I had my scraper with me, and I removed the screen out of the back of the hopper box and scraped that all clean, and scraped the whole like inside of the hopper all clean, in through the chute that goes up from like the fan system up into the hopper. Scraped all of that out because you get some buildup and stuff. Especially the last few weeks where it's been wet and things like that. There's stuff that builds up. So I got all that, flipped the deck up, was able to, clean the underneath of the deck. And that's the beauty of that machine, to be able to do that on a job site with no like jack or tools or having to crawl under it or anything, to be able to have that folding deck up front where it just completely folds up, to be able to access the underneath of the deck for your maintenance, your blade changes, all that sort of stuff, cleaning out the chutes, all that sort of stuff. It's just so versatile, and the fact that it's sort of that clamshell design where you can, you know, dump the hopper box, you know, you can get into all the different areas very, very easily. So I took advantage of the fact that I was right there, on a commercial property there with beside their compost pile, to be able to scrape everything and clean it all out and leave all the debris there. And then, loaded it up, went and did all the trimming and blowing and all that stuff to finish off that job. Came home, put the Navigator, in the garage, put that away for the winter, basically. And then I went on the front lawn and was stepping on it going, you know what? I think it'll be okay to drive on it. We're supposed to get a ton of rain tomorrow on the Tuesday that this episode comes out. So I was like, you know what? I don't want to wait something happened or whatever. I'll just get the trailer in there. I'll try it. And luckily it was completely fine. Stayed on those tracks of gravel where I had, where I knew I could drive over on the lawn, and it was fine. I was able to put the trailer in the yard, put it away for, the next, 4 months or so, and, be able to, let it have a good rest. It's worked hard, this year. And got that all done. And basically wrapped up all the mowing. All the leaf cleanups are done for me. My lower back is absolutely thanking me for that. It's been a rough season, rough leaf cleanup season on my rear back. I've been very, very tired and lots of sore joints and muscles. So glad that that part of it is over. And now all I have to do now is just transition to pruning jobs and hedge trimming, some very light hedge and shrub trimming and stuff like that. Nothing crazy, nothing massive, just a bunch of different houses and stuff that I got to go to, and just do a bunch of different tree trimming and pruning and hedges and bushes and things like that. Little light jobs, things that I can kind of just take it easy and get done. But I'll get them all done before the end of November so that I can do them on, include them all on the final bill that I get done for the end of November. And then that'll be it for the lawn care season in its entirety in terms of my actual lawn care business for 2023 for my 18th season. Looking forward to kind of transitioning now to the hedge trimming and pruning and all that sort of stuff, and not having to worry about the lawns, not having to worry about the trailer with me and parking and all that sort of stuff. I can kind of just, cruise around in the truck and, take the tools that I need for hedge trimming and stuff very easily with just the truck and get that done. So, being the last mow of the season, I thought in particular for this episode that there was a couple things I wanted to talk about sort of in time of reflection, of thinking back, because that is the best time to do that at the end of the season, is to think back about, any challenges that you had, any things that you kind of implemented and how they worked out for you. But first, we'll hear a word from the sponsors, and then we'll get back right into it right after this. So stay tuned.
Summer showers. Dust that chokes. Acres that just won't end. Exmark knows the job of a landscape professional isn't an easy one. That's why we've crafted a legendary line of mowers built to overcome any obstacle. So you're ready to close the deal and finish the job. Like you always do. Cut from the same red metal as your Exmark mower, you aren't just good at this. You were built for this.
Cress is leading the transition from gas-powered lawn equipment for professional use with the industry's first truly game-changing innovation in battery-powered OPE. The Cress 8-Minute Cyber System allows Cress-made 60-volt batteries to fully charge in 8 minutes or less. Now, professional landscapers can replace their gas-powered equipment without sacrificing performance, power, or runtime. And with a full line of equipment benchmarked against gas-powered products, landscapers can finally take charge of their business and make the switch to battery. For more information or to find a dealer near you, visit Cress.com. Cress, we power the professionals.
All right. So as I mentioned previously, being the end of the season is a great time to kind of look back and have time for reflection. And there was a couple of things I wanted to talk about. Actually, it's mainly one thing I wanted to kind of mention. But I did get a comment recently on one of my YouTube videos that is similar to the topic, and this one I'm going to read the comment as it is written, and this will be something that my good friend Paul Camara will absolutely enjoy, according to our conversations at the Equip Expo. He's been waiting for this. So the comment reads, $15. I bet they all leave their dog shit out for you. And the reason I'm laughing is because at the Equip Expo, I was having a dinner with Paul and his guy, Kyle, and we were chatting, and he was talking about the podcast and listening, how he listens to the podcast while he's working and stuff, and that there was one episode in particular where I was talking about my dog waste policy, and that I kept saying the word dog waste. And that I was being, you know, politically correct, I guess you could say, in saying waste instead of shit. And he said, it's almost like a drinking game. You said dog waste so many times that, you know, you could turn it into a drinking game and take a shot every time you say the word waste. But he says he was on the other side of, you know, the podcast there listening, you know, with his headphones going, come on, Julio, just say it. Just say it one more time. Just say shit one time. So... there you go, Paul. Hope you enjoyed it. So I thought I would take the opportunity since the comment literally says that. So so at any rate, this comment is relevant because they're talking about policies, and that's kind of what I wanted to reflect on for the past year is the past policies and policies that I've implemented and stuff. And this dog waste one where they say $15, I bet that's they leave all their dog waste out for you is relevant because I replied to them that nope, because I don't pick up. And I mow around it. So they quickly learn that it will cost them $15 extra to have me show up and leave sections of uncut grass. Only usually takes one time for them to learn, then it's always picked up after that. If I ever get a problem client that doesn't care, then I will charge them. I transition it. I will charge them $2 per pile. And again, I just mow around it. I've only ever had one client like that in the past 18 years, and he would pay more in the dog waste surcharges than the actual mowing cost each week, and would still be left with piles of dog waste and the uncut grass. So he kept paying it and never complained, but also never cleaned up, so I ended up dropping that client. So the point, though, is, and I think this is where maybe it wasn't... explained in that particular video, because it seems like this person's under the impression that, you know, that I'm charging $15 for the dog waste, but that I'm actually cleaning it and stuff. So that's sort of, the part, I guess, that they're confused is that I don't clean it. I mow around it. So the customer is then left still with the same piles and the uncut grass that the pile is sitting on around. So that's where they quickly start to go, okay, well, this isn't worth it. The guy's coming out, we're paying him to mow the lawn, but he's missing spots because we didn't clean the dog waste. And also, the other thing is that I've actually tested different amounts of surcharges throughout the years. And I started out, you know, at $2 and $5 and things like that. And it wouldn't make a difference. When I hit that $15 mark, that's where I saw, at least in all of my clients, that it was, you know, that had dogs and stuff. That's where I saw that that transition of that was enough of a pain point for them to have to actually pay the extra $15 if they didn't pick up the dog waste. And, you know, the lawn wouldn't be cut completely because there'd be the spots missed and stuff like that. That was enough of a trigger for them. That $15 was the pain point. Under $15, and it didn't seem to bother them as much. It was like, okay, whatever. It is what it was, right? But once I hit that $15, and remember, I took like maybe three or four seasons of testing different prices, and I also tested different prices with different clients. And when I hit that $15 sweet spot, it seemed that like majority of the customers, it was never an issue again. That they were always concerned about making sure the lawn was cleaned and all that sort of stuff before I got there. And if, you know, I charged them the $15, they'd be like, you know, I'd have customers that would email me and go like there was dog waste and stuff like thing. Right. So I'd always, the other thing I do is I always make sure I document it with my camera. So I always take a photo because the photo is then, you know, on your camera roll, it's going to have the date and stuff like that. So there's not really, and I always make sure I don't just like zoom in on the picture of the dog waste. Obviously it's kind of a far enough out photo to show that it is their backyard, and that you can see the dog waste and just have it, you know, in your camera roll so that when you bill them, if they dispute it, you've got sort of that photo evidence. So I always make sure I do that. But yeah, I guess the whole point is that with that policy, when I put that in place, is that I actually tested the policy, right? I tested it over multiple seasons, different prices with different clients to kind of see where, you know, the pain point was for clients. Because my point was, I don't want to pick up the dog waste for the past 15, 16 years, or so. I'm just trying to think, for, past 16 years, I would say. I had a dog, is what I'm trying to get at. I was just trying to calculate, when my dog passed away. So my dog passed away, last year. So it's been a year, of not having a dog. But we had a dog for 15 years. We had a beagle. And so for 15 years, I was a dog owner and had to, you know, clean my own backyard on a daily basis, and make sure it's clean and walk the yard before I cut my own lawn and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, it is what it is. It's part of responsible pet ownership. I would never, ever ask a, you know, a contractor that had to do work on my yard to come into my yard and not clean the dog waste, and expect that they're gonna, you know, walk around the backyard and stuff like that with, you know, dog waste around and stuff like that. So that's my point, right? Is with the dog waste policy, is I'm not interested in cleaning it up. I did that for 15 years. I'm on my own lawn. I'm not going to do it for other people's lawn. It's your dog, your responsibility. You take care of it. That's not my business. My business is mowing your lawn. But to do that, I need the lawn to be clear. So with the policy, it's just a pain point is the point of it, right? It's a penalty to get them to clean the yard before I get there. And that's why I don't just clean it up. And that's why I don't mow over it. A lot of people say, well, I'll just mow over it. Well, you mow over it, you know, then you're getting it all inside the deck, your mower, you know, it's constantly raining here. You got to clear out the deck. You got to put your hands in there and clean it out and stuff like that. Clean out the clogs and you know, build up and stuff under the deck. So I'm not doing that, knowing that, you know, I've gone over dog waste and stuff like that. So I just go around it, right? And, you know, and that was another thing that we kind of joked about at the Equip Expo, that I should just put little, I should get like those little, like, you know, the sprinkler flags that you mark your sprinkler heads when you're like going to aerate or do something like that, so you don't hit them. And I should just have like, you know, a little like, pouch thing that hangs off my belt with a bunch of these flags there that, and you know, on the flag, I could have like the $10 charge or $15 dog waste charge on them. Right. And, you know, every pile that you see a dog waste, you throw a flag into it, right? So that the customer gets the point that you, hey, here's $15 for this one, here's $15 for that one. So we were having a howl at the Equip Expo, kind of laughing about that, having a lawn care guy, you know, mowing the lawn with a little, what do they call those, like, for guys that do like, that have archery and stuff like that, like, you know, like Robin Hood or whatever, he would carry that pouch on it. Is it called like a quiver or something like that? That would carry like the arrows and stuff, like having something like that, but with all your dog waste flags in it that you, you know, throw onto the ground every time you see a dog waste pile. You know, it's the whole point of it and mowing around it is that, you know, you go a week, especially in the springtime, lawns are growing like crazy and stuff like that. So you go there and you go to mow the lawn and there's these dog waste piles everywhere. You know, I mow around it. Now you got this tuft of grass that's sticking up high above the rest of the lawn that's nicely cut, with this dog waste on it, right? And it kind of drives the point home that, hey, this is ridiculous. You're paying me to come cut the lawn, but you're not, you know, having sort of the decency or respect to clean the dog waste so that I can do my job. Obviously, if I just mowed over it or picked up the dog waste, then it would just be a much more exaggerated problem because they wouldn't do anything then at that point because then I was doing it for them and I'm not interested in doing it for them. So that's that first point I wanted to touch on. The second point in kind of reflection is talking about and thinking about this year was the first year that I implemented a cancellation policy in my business. And I did that because traditionally what I have found is that in the springtime, you get it's crazy busy. You get the majority of calls coming in through the spring for your lawn care business. And there was a trend of, you know, you get calls from people that the spring is, you get here in the Pacific Northwest, the growth is heavy. It grows like crazy, but it's also always wet and dewy and rainy and stuff like that at times. And it's a lot of work. So people would be wanting to hire you, but just for the spring, just for the 1 or 2 months in spring. And then when the summer kind of, you know, heat sort of hit and where I would traditionally be going to like, you know, a 2 week mowing stuff, they would let you go because they're like, well, now we can handle it. Like we're just going to save money now and just mow it ourselves once a month or whatever the case may be now that you've done all the heavy lifting sort of thing. And that's fine if you're interested in doing that. But for me, I'm not interested in doing that. I want loyal clients. I want clients that are going to be with me for the entire season. So because I started to see this as a trend happening more and more the past few years, I was like, well, I'm going to have to switch it up, right? I've never had a cancellation policy before, but this year I'm going to have, you know, a cancellation policy. So I implemented that cancellation policy, put it on all of the new quotes going out in 2023. And I also included it in the notes on every invoice for existing clients so that they know, hey, this has been implemented. I also added it to the website and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's there visible for everybody to see. And there was a couple instances that I had to use the cancellation policy. One was for a client that they were a tenant of a house. They walked up initially a year ago while I was doing one of the neighbor's houses, asked me to for a quote and stuff and for me to do the lawn that year. So I did the lawn and then in the summertime, they informed me that they were going to be, well, at first they asked me previously if I could go to 2 week mowing. This was in the spring. And I was like, yeah, no, sorry. That's not happening. It's growing like crazy. I'm not going to a 2 week mowing. I said, you're free to, cancel service if you want and find somebody else that'll do 2 week mowing. But for me, I won't. But I said, just remember though, as agreed upon in your initial quote, there is a cancellation fee. And they asked me how much it was. I reminded them and they're like, okay, let me talk, you know, to my husband or whatever. And then, they got back to me and just said, okay, just continue, you know, how it is right now, but we are moving July the 1st or whatever it was, right? And this was like in April that they were asking me if I could go to like a 2-week mowing instead of weekly mowing. So they said, they'll just mow it till the end or that first week of July. And then they're moving after that. And I said, yeah, no problem. As long as, because part of my cancellation policy is that, if you cancel midway through the season, you get the cancellation policy. But I do waive it if you're moving. If you're moving, if a for sale sign goes up on the lawn and the house is for sale and then it sells, as long as I'm mowing it up until that property transfer date, then I don't charge you a cancellation policy. I sort of, as goodwill, here you go. It is what it is, and go with that, right? I just basically charge the cancellation policy if a person is just canceling. It's just to avoid those people that are mainly just trying to get me to do the spring only and then canceling after, or clients that just cancel midway through the season, in the summertime typically, is the issue. So that first instance, it worked out perfectly, right? They wanted 2-week mowing or were trying to get me to go to 2-week mowing. I said, nope, the policy is this, you agreed to it. And there's also a cancellation. You're free to cancel, but there's a cancellation policy, and it stayed as is, right? The contract stayed the way it was. I continued weekly mowing. Sure enough, in June, a for sale sign went on the house. I continued to mow it up until the date that those tenants were leaving. So a for sale, I guess the owner of the house decided to sell the house. I mowed it up to the date. Those people moved out. I continued to mow the neighbor's house. And for the next, it had to have been 4 or 5 weeks or so at least, nobody mowed the house, the lawn, while it was sitting there for sale. Eventually the house sold and new people moved in, and then they did the first mowing, but it was totally getting overgrown and stuff. But at any rate, that was an example of the cancellation policy working. The second one was actually a long-time client that every summer would kind of, same thing, ask me if I could go to 2-week mowing and stuff. And I just had to always explain to them that I couldn't and stuff. And so then they told me that they were going to cancel service then. And I said, no problem, but there's a cancellation policy, just so you know. Just a reminder, right? According to your original agreement and stuff. And they were looking at it going, well, I can't believe you're going to, charge a cancellation policy on, we've been a client for so many years. And I said, well, it's not about how long you're a client. It's about when you're canceling. I said, we're only a few months into the season. Back in, February, before the season started, I email all my clients and say, hey, the season's going to start in about a month or so. I'm going to show up and start doing the mowing. If you want to cancel, let me know before March 1st so that I know. And I explained to them that the issue is that the majority of the calls come in, the springtime. And I'm only one person. I can only physically do a specific number of lawns, to handle. When I'm thinking about, I have to obviously take everything into consideration, assume, the focus, obviously, of having clients long-term for the entire season, which means when it comes to fall as well and all the leaves are falling, I have to be able to do that in the rain, all the leaf cleanups, all that sort of stuff, and I'm by myself. So I take a limited amount of clients. I say, if you cancel then mid-season, there's a lot of clients that I get. There's tons of calls that I get that I turn down. For people looking for work because I'm full. My schedule's full. That's all I can handle for that season. So I say, if you now cancel a month later, and the phone starts to dry out, there's, not as many calls coming through anymore. There's a good possibility that your spot on the schedule could stay vacant until next spring. That's the issue. That's why there's a cancellation policy. And that's why I ask you in the off season, if you're confirming that I'm coming back, or if you're canceling before that. And this was a client that they weren't moving or anything like that. They just told me that, you know, their son was a teenager and, you know, he wants to, keeps bugging them for money and stuff and stuff. So they're like, you know, you do some chores then. How about you take over mowing the lawn sort of thing, right? So it wasn't like they're moving away or anything like that. They were just canceling service to let their son do it so that they could pay their son to do the mowing and that anyways, right? So I'm like, I'm sorry, I got to charge you the cancellation policy because, you know, I might not be able to fill that particular spot. For that year, you know, for our regular mowing client, especially heading into the summer when traditionally there's drought and stuff, there's not going to be too many calls for people looking for regular weekly lawn mowing service at that time, sort of thing, right? So you kind of leave me high and dry in that portion, right? So I ended up charging them the cancellation policy, put it directly on their credit card, and never heard from them again. They didn't complain about it after I explained why it is what it is and the reasons that motivate the cancellation policy. And that is sort of like a transition there, right? It's basically kind of giving myself a month's worth of income on their lawn to kind of try to find, basically 30 days to try to find a client to take that spot. And if not, then I'm out. You know, obviously the rest of the income for the rest of the year. But at least it gives me like 30 days, you know, equivalent of like four mows or whatever the case may be of that property to try to find somebody to fill that spot if, you know, they do cancel. Because obviously at the end of the day, you can't really force people to not cancel your service. People cancel for all sorts of reasons. Moving is the most common and stuff like that. But most people, they just will, you know, if they have an issue with you or don't like your service or whatever the case may be, they just don't renew the next season or whatever the case may be, right? But there was that trend of people hiring me in the beginning of the season and then canceling, you know, just a couple months later after the spring. And it seemed to be something that was like every season you'd get one or two of these that just wanted that, you know, heavy part of the season done, the heavy growth and stuff like that. And I just wasn't interested in that. So I implemented that cancellation policy to basically deter people looking for that, knowing that, hey, if they are wanting a quote and stuff like that, I'm only looking for clients that want, you know, the full season service. So if their plan is to hire me just for those few months and then cancel, well, then they know that they're going to get charged a cancellation policy on top of that. So, you know, it absolutely deterred clients for that. I had no clients this year for the first time in many years of just hiring me just for the spring and then canceling in the summer. And then I got to test that policy again with an existing client who, you know, for, you know, same sorts of reasons that, you know, they were canceling because of wanting to give their, you know, teenage son the chores to do instead, but were kind of leaving me high and dry in the middle of a season when, you know, you'd at least think, hey, if you're a long-term customer, you'd at least let me finish off the season and let him take over next season, if that's the case, right? But you're cutting right in the middle, and I know it's not because of that. It's because of the summer. It's the same reason. It's that things are slowing down, and you rather just like, because you're already asking me about 2-week mowing in the beginning of the season and stuff like that. So I know that I don't entirely trust that his response about, you know, a teenage son mowing stuff, because I still drive through that neighborhood every week and the lawn was not being cut. So it wasn't something like the teenager is, you know, looking to make money, because if he was, he'd mow the lawn and make the money, but he wasn't. The lawn was going months and months and months without being cut. Still to this day, last week I drove past it and it hadn't been touched for leaves, you know, probably for a month, leaves completely covering the lawn, all rotting and stuff like that. And it's, you know, it is what it is, right? If you're a teenager looking for work, then, you know, for your parents to pay you, there was plenty of stuff to do on that property to get it done. So, you know, initially when he commented in an email saying, can't believe you're going to charge a long-term, you know, client cancellation fee and stuff like that. He initially made me kind of feel bad about it. But then now when I look back and see that his lawn hasn't been cut and it was just all kind of a BS excuse of saying that his teenage son, whatever the case may be, because I've never seen a teenage son, their kids that I've seen there are all little, like the wife goes to pick them up at school and stuff like that. There hasn't been any teenage son. So I think that was just an excuse. So now I feel like, okay, I'm justified. I charged it and it is what it is. And I was fully justified in doing so because it is what it is, right? And the calls, especially this year, we had that crazy drought. We had the first time, in a long time where there was a full watering ban on lawns and stuff. There was absolutely no calls coming in for lawn mowing throughout the summer season. And then heading into the fall, you know, I haven't had any requests for lawn mowing. So that spot did actually stay empty. I was able to fill it with other work and stuff like that, but no regular like weekly maintenance clients took that spot. So I feel completely justified in that. So the end of the year, looking back at those sorts of things, when you implement policies and stuff like that and kind of reflect back on them and see how they worked out, see what worked for you, kind of think about what you need to change for next year. And all that time, you know, it's good to kind of look back while stuff is fresh in your brain at the end of the mowing season and kind of go through it and see what sorts of things were working for you, what didn't work for you, what should you change? You know, if you're testing those dog waste policies and stuff like that, should you change them up a bit? Should you add, you know, more like I was doing different, amounts and stuff those first few years or whatever the case may be, and just trying it out to see what those pain points are and how it all works. But at any rate, you know, these are the times to reflect back on your, the previous season while it's fresh in your mind, to think about what worked and what didn't work for you. So that's it for this one, guys. Here's to wishing you guys all overwhelming success and freedom in your lawn care business. Bye for now.